We didn't have time to greet this morning, so just kind of look at the people next to you and wave at them. Okay, good. Yeah. Some of you should be in parades. You're that good. All right? I'm actually doing the whole parade wave. We're starting into a brand new series today. And how many have ever seen the movie by Clint Eastwood, Unforgiven? You see that movie? Right? See that one? What a title for a movie. Right? What a title for a movie. And what I would say is a lot of people walk around with that feel and move through life with that really being the theme of their life. And yet God says there's something completely different. He can turn the world completely upside down for that. And so this word that we're going to look at this month is common in churches. It's used a lot. It's talked a lot about. But I don't know how much it's understood, and then I don't know how much it's lived in. And so this month, we really want to pour that focus into our time in here to understand what it is and then to take that next step of living in it. Okay? And I think it... It has the possibility of bringing some things that have been buried for a long time to the surface. And I don't take that lightly. I think that makes any one of us vulnerable. And maybe you don't feel comfortable with feeling that vulnerability. So before we dig in, even this week, and this is just the beginning, we won't dig in too deep today, but we can set up the next few weeks. But so before we do that, I want to pray. Because I know if I didn't know any of you, if I didn't know any of you, your stories, I would know that that digging into what we're looking at this morning can be very painful. And I want it to be placed that you're safe for that to happen, and I want it to be a place where we can actually deal with that. We can hold the hurt in our own lives and the lives of people around us, the people in this room, we can hold that hurt, and we can deal with it. Okay? So I want to pray right from the beginning, because I think there is the tendency for all of us, especially in a group setting, to just keep it buried, just keep it covered. Just to press it down as far as we could go so that we don't have to feel and we don't have to deal with things. But the truth is, the healing that comes, and that's one of the words that we'll be looking at this month, the healing that comes only comes if we really deal with the hurt. So let me pray, okay? I mean, I don't want to scare you. Some of you have a look on your face like, man, I think I need to go to the bathroom and maybe just walk out into the parking lot and take off. But I want to pray for us, okay? So as I lead, if you agree with me, if what I'm saying is what you're asking the Lord for in your heart, say, that's right. Yep, that's exactly it. If you're old school, you can say amen, because that's the same thing. Okay? All right, let me lead us. Lord, I know in this room, I know because you've given me the privilege of being a pastor, a shepherd. So I know the hurts of so many in this room. And I pray that that we will all have the courage as you lead us, not as I lead, but as you lead us, that we'll have the courage to let you uncover the hurts that go so deep in us. And especially the hurts that lead to unforgiveness. That lead to the thought, the possibility of revenge, like really thinking and wanting bad to happen to someone else because they were so bad and hurting us and hurting others. Help us through your word and through your spirit to be in a really safe place to deal with that, so those hurts can be healed. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. All right, so the next 4 weeks, each week we're going to deal with a different part of forgiveness. And each week starts with an H, okay, just so we can remember it. And each one of those H words only has four letters, so it shouldn't be hard for us to remember it. But today, we're really opening up what can be very painful because we're using the word hurt, okay? All right, so I'm not going to have you raise your hand, but how many of you have ever been hurt? Okay, you don't have to raise your hand. No, you don't have to. Some of you, your pain's so deep, you're going, yes! Okay? How many have been hurt? All right, so just look at whoever's sitting next to you and say, I've been hurt. Okay? Just look at them. Say, I've been hurt. Okay? All right, so let me just ask you another question. How many of you have ever hurt someone? Okay, you know what? Dan, you're raising your hand like on everything. I got you, buddy. You should have sat in the front row so we could just use you as the decoy duck. All right? How many of you have hurt somebody? So just look at whoever's sitting next to you and say, I've hurt someone. Let me take it a little bit step further, okay? A lot of you said you've been hurt. How many of you have been hurt badly? Like it's painful. Like if you think of it right now, you re-experience at least some of the pain from that hurt. Like you've been hurt that badly, okay? This wouldn't be one of those. When I was in Haiti on one of the trips, I was walking out to see one of the young men. Somebody came and said, hey, Donald's here to see you. And I went out to see him. And in Haiti, there's not many lights, so it's dark. So I kind of see a silhouette in the distance, and I just walked towards that silhouette. Unbeknownst to me, there was a cinder block halfway there. And I was in sandals. And so as I walked, I went boom with my toe, and I could just feel it. I could just hit it. It hit, and I went, ah. And, you know, it's so dark, I can't see, it's bleeding, but I feel some moisture down there, you know. Didn't see it till I got back in. Now, that hurts, right? It made all of you go, ugh, when you did that. That hurts, but that's not a bad hurt that when I think about it, I go, okay, it doesn't send me into trauma. It just hurt. I'm talking about bad hurts. That when you think about it, there's a wave of some emotions that come over you. If that's true, just look at the person next to you and say, I've been hurt bad. Okay? Go ahead and say that. All right. May I take it? How many of you have ever hurt somebody bad? Like, you've hurt them bad. Like, if they thought of it, they would get a wave. If they thought of it, they might picture you in that bad moment and you hurt them. If that's true, then look at whoever's sitting next to you and say, I've hurt someone bad. So this idea that God's talking about is vitally important, right? This forgiveness idea is vitally important because if it isn't forgiveness, then it's the other. It's unforgiven. It's that whole Clint Eastwood taking a gun and saying to the guy, no, I don't forgive you. That's a movie that pictures what's really going on in us if we're not living in forgiveness. I'm going to read a passage this morning. It's a long passage. It's an entire chapter, so just call me Pastor Steve this morning. It's from the book of Genesis. So before you look there, we're going to end up in Genesis 37. But I just want to stop this. Go ahead and go to that next one, Sasha. Go ahead and go to that one. Genesis, listen to this. Genesis is a noun. It's the origin or mode of formation of something. Look at the synonyms: origin, source, root, beginning, start. The book of Genesis tells us the first stories about what happens in real life. It tells us about the first family. And if you're here this morning, you understand to some degree family. It tells us about the first walk away from God. It tells us about the first murder. It tells us a lot about the first. And this is one of the first times that God's going to deal in an expansive way about forgiveness. So there's a reason that he gives us this story. It's not just to tell us about a young man named Joseph. It's supposed to, it's to tell us this kind of story, although the details may be different, is going to happen in life and it's going to happen to you. You are going to get hurt and you are going to hurt. You are going to get hurt bad and you are going to hurt bad. Okay? You're going to hurt others. So as we go through the story, it's not just a look back at some ancient person named Joseph that happened thousands of years ago in another part of the world. It's about my story too. It's about me. So when I'm reading through this passage, I want you to see if you can find you. And you might not find it in an exact duplicate, but you might find it in the feelings of it. Okay? So if you have your Bible or your smartphone, tablet, open to Genesis chapter 37. Genesis chapter 37, and we don't have time to stop a lot in this because there's a lot in here. So I'll just stop when I feel like it's something that relates to this forgiveness thing. So Jacob settled again in the land of Canaan. So how many have been to Canaan lately? All right, nobody in here? Another land. So why don't you just kind of picture here, okay? Jacob settled again in the land of Canaan where his father had lived as a foreigner. This is the account of Jacob and his family. So it's going to tell us about this one particular family. When Joseph was 17 years old, he often tended his father's flocks. Anybody shepherd in here? All right. So again, Canaan, long way away from here. Shepherding, not a common practice, at least in this church family. But I think we can get it. It's a place, and this is what his dad's occupation was. When Joseph was 17, oh, let me just stop. Any 17-year-olds in here? We got any 17-year-olds? We do? Raise your hand if you're 17. Don't do this. Yeah, okay, put your hand up. Put your hand up, 17. All right, so we got this. Again, we're not in Canaan. Any of you three shepherds? Shepherds? None? Any of you named Joseph? No? Okay, all right. But 17, we got that. So when I'm reading through this, I just want you to think about somebody in this age group. Okay? All right, boy, I'm really going to take forever to get through this. When Joseph was 17 years old, he often attended his father's flock. He worked for his half-brothers. So we know what this is like. This is the blended family. This is the original Brady Bunch. And if you think Marsha was an episode, you're about to see an episode of a blended family. He worked for his half-brothers, the sons of his father's wife, Bilhah and Zilpah. But Joseph reported to his father some of the bad things his brothers were doing. Okay, so we got a half-brother who goes and checks out on his older brothers and comes back with a bad report. Not going really good so far, right? If you think that was bad, look at verse 3. Jacob loved Joseph more than any of the other children because Joseph had been born to him in his own old age. So one day, Jacob had a special gift made of Joseph, a beautiful robe. All right, so look in the opening words. This is just a disaster. It's just a disaster. Blended family, father's favorite. I don't know. Does this word seem appropriate? Tattletale? Or at least naive, right? At least naive. Beautiful new robe. But his brothers hated Joseph because their father loved him more than the rest of them. They couldn't say a kind word to him. You ever been upset with somebody and, for like a day, 2 days, something like that, you're just ticked at them? And you either say nothing, or when you say something, it is not nice. You ever notice when you're mad at somebody, even good words can become bad words? Like when you're ticked at them and you say hi, how do you say hi? Like you're just saying the word hi. Hi. Right? Like when it says they nothing good that they say. So they're at breakfast, pass the milk becomes pass the milk. And then you just don't look at the person. You reach out and get the jug, you know? Are you picking up what I'm picking up? Like there is constant tension in this home. Constant tension. One night Joseph had a dream. When he told his brothers about it, they hated him more than ever. Listen to this dream, he said. Somebody needed to get Joseph aside and have a conversation with him, right? Like, don't say everything you know or think. This is what he said. We were out in the field tying up bundles of grain. Suddenly my bundle stood up and your bundles all gathered around and bowed low before mine. How you taking that in? Do we have any... You're the youngest of siblings. You're the youngest sibling in your family. Anybody? Anybody? Kev. Okay. Yep, we get some. Put your hand. Listen, people, don't do this, you know, like this. Just raise your hand. Are you the youngest? Raise your hand. Keep it up. Keep it up. All right. You that are not the youngest, look at him and just say this. Babies. Okay? Right? Steve and I are the oldest in our sibling group. And, of course, when we were born, my parents were poor, had nothing, right? So if we said, Dad, we need a quarter, he'd say, well, you know, get a job. Suzanne is 12 years younger than me, 13 years younger than Steve. And this is the picture we have of Suzanne and my dad. My dad's got his wallet out. He's pulling money out. And Suzanne's got her hand out like this, right? So can you imagine in your sibling group, the youngest one tells you something like this? Hey, I had a dream. Well, no kidding. We had pepperoni and sausage pizza last night. No, this is a dream from God. So what do you think the brother's response to this when he tells him the dream? Let's see if I can pick up. Suddenly my bundle stood up and your bundles all gathered around and bowed low before mine. Had to put that word in there, bowed low before mine. His brothers responded, so you think you will be our king, do you? Do you actually think you will reign over us? And they hated him all the more because of his dreams and the way he talked about them. Soon Joseph had another dream, and again he told his brothers about it. Listen, I've had another dream, he said. The sun, the moon, and 11 stars bowed low before me. This time he told the dream to his father as well to his brothers, but his father scolded him. What kind of dream is this? He asked. Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow to the ground before you? But while his brothers were, here's another word, jealous of Joseph, his father wondered what the dream meant. Soon after this, Joseph's brothers went to pasture their father's flock at Shechem. When they had been gone for some time, Jacob said to Joseph, your brothers are pasturing the sheep in Shechem. Get ready and I will send you to them. Now, how did this go before when he sent Joseph to check out on the things? Did it go well? Like again, we're not there, but this is kind of a mess, isn't it? Like this household is a mess. And the person who's supposed to be leading it, Jacob... You can't say that it's naive at this point. It's just downright foolish. Jacob said to Joseph, your brothers are pasturing the sheep at Shechem. Get ready and I will send you to them. I'm ready to go. Joseph replied, go and see how your brothers and the flocks are getting along, Jacob said. Then come back and bring me a report. So Jacob sent him on his way and Joseph traveled to Shechem from their home in the valley of Hebron. When he arrived there, a man from the area noticed him wandering around the countryside. What are you looking for? He said. I'm looking for my brothers, Joseph replied. Do you know where they are pasturing their sheep? Yes, the man told him. They have moved on from here, but I heard them say, let's go on to Dothan. So Joseph followed his brothers to Dothan and found them there. When Joseph's brothers saw him coming, they recognized him at a distance. How do you think they recognized him at a distance? How do you think they recognized him? Okay. Yeah. It doesn't tell us yet. It's going to tell us that a little bit later on. So when they see their brother, and they probably know, you know, if he didn't have the coat on, they'd recognize him because you just know those kind of things, right? In your home, did you have this? We had stairs coming up to the upstairs where my brother and I had our bedroom. Couldn't you tell who was coming up the stairs by the squeak on this, you know, how this the stairs squeak? So you get to know those things, but it's way worse than that. It's not, I recognize that's my brother at a distance. It's, they see the coat. Do you think that coat made them, like, sit back in a moment and think, man, that's a stylish outfit? What emotion do you think it evoked when they saw that coat? Man, I mean, this is, do you notice the hatred just keeps growing? And then it's almost as if God's got to throw in some other words to just inflame this. They're jealous of him. Let me see if I can Fine. When Joseph's brothers saw him coming, they recognized him at a distance. As he approached, they made plans to kill him. Here comes the dreamer, they said. Have you? Just want to kind of side on this. When you have a person in your life that you're mad at or that hurt you or that you're going to hurt, have you noticed you don't even say their name? Like you describe them in some mocking way. Like, you know, him. You know him. That's what they're doing here. Here comes the dreamer. Oh, I'm going to have to type this bigger next time. Tell me what verse. Oh, I gotcha. Here comes the dreamer, they said. Come on, let us kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns. We could tell our father a wild animal has eaten him. Then we'll see what becomes of his dreams. Again, how many of you have siblings? You may have ever said out loud, or maybe you thought this, I'm going to kill them. All right, now how many of you meant? And just know that we have officers of the court here. How many of you meant, I'm going to kill? You know, you did. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe Max. Yeah. You get the plan. Here he comes. Let's kill him. Throw him in a cistern. Tell dad a lie. Do you see how quick this came to them? It's because they had given this a lot of thought. If I never see my brother again, that's okay with me. If something terrible happens to him, if he's out looking for us in the sheep and an 18-wheeler plows over him, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. And now it's gone to this point. But when Reuben heard their scheme, he came to Joseph's rescue. Now, he didn't do this out loud. He did this privately. Let's not kill him, he said. Why should we shed any blood? Let's just throw him in this empty cistern here in the desert. Then he'll die. This was the brother he was tight with, okay? This is the older brother who's really trying to look out and say, this is getting crazy. When Reuben heard the scheme, he came to Joseph's rescue. Let's not kill him, he said. Why should we shed any blood? Let's throw him into this empty cistern here in the wilderness. Then he'll die without our laying a hand on him. Reuben was secretly planning to rescue Joseph and return him to his father. So when Joseph arrived, his brothers ripped off the beautiful robe he was wearing. Then they grabbed him and threw him in the cistern. Now the cistern was empty. There was no water in it. Then just as they were sitting down to eat, they looked up and saw a caravan of camels in the distance coming towards them. It was a group of Ishmaelite traders taking a load of gum, balm, and aromatic resin from Gilead down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain by killing our brother? We'd have to cover up the crime. Instead of hurting him, let's sell him to those Ishmaelite traders. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." That's family love, right? His brothers agreed. When the Ishmaelites who were Midianite traders came by, Joseph's brothers pulled him out of the cistern and sold him to them for 20 pieces of silver. The traders took him to Egypt. Sometime later, Reuben returned to get Joseph out of the cistern. When he discovered that Joseph was missing, he tore his clothes in grief. Then he went back to his brothers and lamented, "The boy is gone. What will I do now?" And the brothers killed a young goat and dipped Joseph's robe in its blood. They sent the beautiful robe to their father with the message, "Look what we found. Doesn't this robe belong to your son?" The father recognized it immediately. "Yes," he said, "it's my son's robe. A wild animal must have eaten him." They didn't have to tell the lie. Like they, do you get this? They didn't even have to tell the lie. He sent the robe with blood on it. Let the dad come to his own conclusion. What a terrible thing. Like don't you know this when a child comes up missing and years go on without a family knowing? Do you know how many pictures go through their head of what could have happened, what might have happened? And Joseph tore his clothes and dressed himself in burlap. He mourned deeply for his son for a long time. His family all tried to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. "I will go to my grave mourning for my son," he would say, and then he would weep. Meanwhile, the Midianite traders arrived in Egypt, where they sold Joseph to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Potiphar was captain of the palace guard. Isn't Genesis chapter 37 just an incredibly painful real life situation that's duplicated time after time after time in our world? It's painful to read and think of somebody a long time ago, but we don't really know him. But the truth is, this is going on now in our world and in our lives. Let me just try and pull apart some of the hurt. Okay? Sasha, you go to that next slide. How was Joseph hurt? Here, let me just give you some of them, okay? He was hated. And that was repeated several times. Like, again, let me just say this. How many of you have ever felt, not that you're disliked, but somebody really hates you? Anybody in here? Anybody have somebody? Verbal abuse. Excluded, man. I can't tell you how many young people I talk to that even have a group of friends but still feel excluded. Misunderstood. If you're a teenager, I'm just going to ask you to raise your hand right now. Okay? Go ahead and raise your hand. Ever feel misunderstood? Yeah. Okay, I got it. Got your hands up before you even got there. Jealousy. People that looked at you and wanted what you had. Gossip. Ambushed. Like this was literally being physically ambushed. But have you ever felt relationally ambushed? Emotionally ambushed? Humiliated. Not just verbal abuse, but physical abuse. Abandoned. Betrayed. Kidnapped. Like, can you even just picture somehow in your mind or in your emotions what it would be like to be kidnapped and not know if you're going to live the next moment? And this is a way for us to look at it. It's become this little phrase, human trafficking. Isn't that what was going on there? Isn't that, like the brothers, you know, I mean the plans for, in Joseph's case got better. Let's kill him. No, let's just throw him in here and hope he dies. Let's sell him. But that's what this is. It's human. It's one person being sold as a slave for whatever purpose. So would you say in accumulating this list and reading Genesis 37 that Joseph was hurt? So what I want to look at in our last few minutes is kind of a big picture overview that doesn't happen in a moment. It doesn't happen in a moment. Big picture overview of what we can do with hurt. What did Joseph do with hurt? He had this list of hurts, and he could have kept a long record of it, but he decided to do it different. What's the natural way to handle hurt? What's the way we usually handle hurts, or is pretty common? Here's just a few of them. One is to dive into pleasure, self-medicate, or that will eventually lead to addictions. You can almost count if you have a family member, if you've gone through the struggle, or somebody you know, an acquaintance, is deep into an addiction, that if you track it back, it doesn't always have to happen this way, but more often than not, there's a hurt that's deep. It's not just I stubbed my toe on a cinder block in Haiti. It's not that. It's a deep hurt. That the only way they knew how to deal with it was to live in the moment or to cover it up. To do something would make them not feel, not think about that. Another way is this, to become a prisoner of destructive emotions and to go inward. Man, I can't tell you how many times I've seen this happen. And you can literally see the person start to shrivel up. Their face becomes almost a thunderstorm. It's a cloud around them all the time because there's this darkness that's heavy and they kind of shrivel up. It's because they're going inside. Remember we talked about that a brother offended is harder to win than a walled city. Remember we said protect your heart, but don't protect it so much that it becomes a prison. In someone's case like this, they've been hurt that bad. They build up a wall that's so big so they can survive, but that's all they can do is just survive. Barely survive. They can't live. Or maybe it's this. It's this idea of revenge. We'll talk about revenge more in the next few weeks, but it can take on a lot of forms. It really can. Revenge can be very overt. Daryl, you hurt me, and listen, dude, I'm going to pay you back 1,000 times over. It can be really clear. Daryl didn't. Well, he's hurt me before, but not in that way. Just in that twist my arm behind my back kind of way. But it can be different. It can be covert, too. It could be I'm not doing anything very directly to him, but man, I hope something bad happens to him. Give me that. I hear about, something that happened. Daryl got behind on his mortgage payments and he loses his house. And in my head, I say something like this. Well, he kind of deserves that. Right? Don't want to go into it a lot here, but this is one of the things we do with hurt. It's one of the natural things. So my question this morning is, how did Joseph handle it? And I don't have time to go into a lot of depth on it, but I just want to give you kind of a big picture of it. Okay? How did Joseph handle it? So we're going to pick up the story 20 years later, and I don't have time to explain where Joseph's at yet. We'll get into that in the next few weeks. But just know, life has changed. He's in another country. He's in a powerful position. And he comes face to face with his brothers again. So Genesis 45, 1 through 9 says this. I love these opening words. Joseph could stand it no longer. Because if you only read Genesis 37, you're going, oh boy. There were many people in the room, and he said to the attendants, out all of you. So he was alone with his brother. What do you mean he's alone with his brothers? You mean the guys who said they hated him, verbally abused him, physically abused him, ambushed him, threw him in his cistern, sold him as a slave? Those brothers? Yeah. Verse 2, then he broke down and wept. He wept so loudly the Egyptians could hear him, and word of it quickly carried to Pharaoh's palace. 20 years later, he was 17, now he's 37. He says these words, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? I love these next words. But his brothers were speechless. Yeah, no kidding. They were stunned to realize that Joseph was standing there in front of them. Please come closer, he said to them. So they came closer. And he said again, I'm Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into slavery in Egypt. But don't be upset. Don't be angry with yourselves for selling me to this place. It was God who sent me here ahead of you to preserve your lives. This famine that has ravaged the land for 2 years will last 5 more years, and there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. God has sent me ahead of you to keep you and your families alive and to preserve many survivors. So it was God who sent me here, not you. He's the one who made me an advisor to Pharaoh, the manager of his entire palace and the governor of all Egypt. Now hurry back to my father and tell him, this is what your son Joseph said. God made me master over all the land of Egypt, so come down to me immediately. So how in the world did he get from Genesis 37 to Genesis 45? How did he get from 17 to 37? How did he get to this place? How did he not throw himself into pleasure? How did he not go inside? How did he not just day after day, and we're going to hear the roller coaster ride of, he gets sold as a slave, he gets thrown in prison, he gets forgotten. Like, how in those dark days didn't he just sit there and plan out someday? I'm going to see my brothers again. And when I see them, I'm going to pay them back for every ounce of pain I've had and hurt I've had in my life. So this could sound really, really bumper stickerish, shallow. I promise you we'll go into it further and further as we move this month. But I'm going to give you four words that I think really were big words in his life. Okay? The first word is promises. Remember in the middle of Genesis chapter 37, before he got thrown in the cistern, right after he got the robe, there was this sequence of events where he 17-year-old, talking when he shouldn't have been talking, saying things he shouldn't have been saying. But do you remember when he said to his brothers, I had a dream? Do you remember when he said that? Remember, we're in the field, my bundle rises up, you're all bowed down before me, there's the sun and the moon and the stars and 11 stars, and they all bowed down to my star. Do you remember that conversation? Where's he at in Genesis 45? He's the head bundle. Right? Like at 17, you don't know. You know, he's just going, I just had this dream. This is great. Hey, can I tell you about my dream? Do you realize this is like really amazing to me that he had so little of a message from God, but he held on to that message from the time he was 17 until he was 37. If you want to know why he didn't move to the point of revenge, it's because he held on to this promise from God. This is going to sound very much bumper stickerish. But I'm telling you, if you've been hurt, the first place you need to go is into God's promises. Into His words that you can hold on to, and you may have to hold on to it for 5 years or 10 years or 15 or 20. You may have to hold on to it a lot longer than that. But those promises are there to begin a process of dealing with hurt. And sometimes those promises are just God saying, listen, I know about hurt. And I know you. And I've got you. Just trust me. Like some of you are sitting here thinking, man, Tim, people here this morning are thinking Joseph's growing up years is crazy. Well, his looked like easy street compared to mine. I know some sitting in this room right now that Joseph's story is no worse than yours. I'm telling you, the only way to move in a direction of that hurt being healing is to find promises. So there's this great great New Testament passage that talks about promises. Sash, could you put those words up there? 2 Peter 1, 3 and 4. His divine power has granted to us all things that pertain to life and godliness. Everything that pertains to our life. Everything that pertains to me living in a healthy way. Through the knowledge of Him who called us to His own glory and excellence, by which He granted to us His, I love this, precious and very great promises, so that through them you might become partakers of a divine nature. Do you know what that's all about? It's living above just what I would naturally do. Like I would naturally move to covering those hurts up by pleasure or masking them. That might lead to addiction. What comes natural to me is to close up and shrivel. What comes natural to me is this. You hit me on the cheek, guess what I'm going to do to you? Right? That's natural. When he talks about this divine nature, he's talking about not having to do what comes natural to me alone, but what can come natural to me because of God's love, because of His connection with me. So there's a chance I don't have to run to pleasure. I don't have to run to addiction. I don't have to close up, shrink up. There's a chance, there's a possibility that I can live in a way that's not just seeking out overtly or covertly revenge on somebody who hurt me. he says it in this way, his precious and very great promises. And if you look it up, it means priceless and the very best. He's got these priceless promises that if we'll grab onto them and hold on to them, they'll carry us through in times where we don't even understand it. They'll carry us through. I don't know how Joseph did it at 17. Two dreams. He grabs the promise of that and lives in it. Lives it in a way that when the people who hurt him come face to face with them and he can inflict any pain that he wants on them, he doesn't. He embraces them. It's unbelievable. Some of you know that my wife's from the Pennsylvania Dutch area out east. It's Amish land. And not far from where her mom and stepdad's home is the school that several years ago, the gunman went into the school, cleared out all the boys, kept the girls there, and shot and killed those Amish girls. Do you remember that? We were out this last summer. We're driving to an Amish auction, which I'm not even sure. Can you put those together? An Amish auction. We're headed there. As we're going, my sister-in-law, as we passed this one house, said, the guy who killed those young girls, that's where him and his family lived. Like they lived in the area. And his wife lived there afterwards. And his wife's life was just shattered. Just shattered. So they were going to have a memorial service. And of course, media from around the world just overran the place. So the day of the memorial, the Amish community came. And stood as a barrier between the media and the family of the man that had killed their kids. I'd gone from Tennessee to Pennsylvania, family reunion to family reunion, and I was at my Tennessee family reunion, and my aunt and my cousin said to me, hey, we just went to a conference, and the speaker was the wife of the man who killed those Amish students. And she shared with us the unbelievable forgiveness that was offered to her on the day that those shootings happened. Can you picture this? Amish people barrier. Media and a family that's hurting, that doesn't understand what just happened to them. Now you tell me how someone can do that. Unless they live in the great, the priceless, best promises of God. So if you're here today and you're hurting, I'm telling you, a starting place for you is to find God's promises. I think that's what he did. From 17 to 37, he lived in this promise. Here's the second thing that I think is really important if you're going to heal. It moves from promises to partner. I love how it says this in Genesis 39, and we'll get into it in the next couple of weeks about what's happened. But remember, Joseph got sold as a slave. He got sold to Potiphar. So that's who it's talking about here. In Genesis 39, verse 2 and 3, it says this, the Lord was with Joseph. And verse 3 says, Potiphar, this guy who's not a God follower to our knowledge, Potiphar noticed this and realized that the Lord was with Joseph. Here's what I'm going to tell you. If you were hurt, and I'm not talking stub your toe hurt, I'm talking about hurt badly. The only way you're going to begin the healing process is to find God's promises. And the second thing is to partner with God. It's to walk with God through that hurt. You're going to find this is this clear pattern as you look at the snapshots that we get over the next 20 years of Joseph's life. You're going to find him not going inward, not seeking revenge when he could have, not stepping into pleasure in a moment that, well, maybe this is it. You're going to find this constant thing that he partners with God. And he lets God walk with him through this hurt. So, how many of you have heard Psalm 23, the 23rd Psalm before? You've heard that before? Sash, could you put that up? Could you, and this is the English Standard Version, but could you read this out loud? And as you're reading it out loud, if you're one of those people who's even letting that hurt surface a little bit, I want you to read these words with that hurt right there. Okay? And let's read it out loud. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for You are with me. Your rod and Your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. You know what that's talking about? It's talking about God partnering with me. It's talking about me partnering with God. In my hurt, as I walk through it, it's me partnering with Him. So, if you want to start on this trail, if you don't, I know it feels so good sometimes to lean into the revenge part of it. But if you want to lean away from it, if you want to live in a healthier way, and what you're going to find is this, it's not just healthy for that other person or healthy for the possibility of a relationship, but ultimately it's about me being healthier. If I want to lean away, if I want to live in a different way, that process starts with promises and it moves to partnering with that, like walking with Him. Told you it could be very bumper sticker. I got promises and partners. Then here's the third word, purpose. As we go through that 20 years, the snapshots, I wonder every time I read it, how could he hold on? How could he hold on? He didn't know the end result. He had two dreams. How could he hold on? And this can get really, really complicated to try and explain. I don't think it's that complicated when you talk to somebody who's experienced it. But if you try to explain it to them before they experienced it, I think it would be incredibly complicated. This is it. If you know somebody who you know what pain they've been through, and they don't close up, they don't live in revenge, they don't go to addiction, but when you're around them, they seem really healthy. And you sit down and talk with them, they'll say something like this: I don't know. It's just somehow God's turned that horrible, bad experience into something good in my life. Like, I don't understand. You know, you're going to reap what you sow. So you sow painful seeds. You should receive, you know, this painful harvest. But you talk to these people, and there's not this incredible, painful harvest. There's not this energy of revenge. And I believe it's because they found this purpose in it. So I want to read verses that usually relate to purpose, but I want to go a little further than just the verses. And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to His purpose for them. All right, so everything to work together for good. Everything works together for good is what He's saying. If you read before this, it's talking about pain. Like pain that's so deep that the ground outside groans from it. Like not only do I feel the pain, but the physical planet around me feels the pain. It's that deep. So he's talking about some pain here too. We know that God caused everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to the purpose for them. For God knew His people in advance. So He knew Joseph was going to go through this. Yeah. He knew His people in advance and He chose them to become like His son so that His son would be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. What in the world is He talking about? He's talking about this, that before the world was created, God loved you and chose you. He's talking about this, that His plan was that Christ would come and experience pain. Pre-planned pain for good. And so He says this, I knew the pain you were going to go through. And somehow it's going to work together to make you more like My Son, Christ, who's the firstborn among many brothers and sisters who go through pain. And somehow that pain that should send them spiraling in a destructive way works to good. Having chosen them, He called them to come to Him. Having called them, He gave them the right standing with Himself. And having given them the right standing, He gave them the glory. I think that glory is when you and I don't lean in the direction of revenge. When we don't hurt the hurter. When somehow we can come to a place of forgiveness. That maybe people around are going, are you crazy? What shall we say about such wonderful things as these? Like what can I say? Like, tell me this isn't wonderful, that you who have been hurt so deeply could be freed from that, and not only freed yourself, but free the person who hurt you. Not talking stub toe hurt, I'm talking about deep hurt. I love this, if God is for us, who can ever be against us? That's why all things can work together, because if God's for us, who can be against us? It's to grab His promise. It's to partner with Him. God, go with me through this. It's to find purpose. It's to know that God's going to use even the bad things that we've gone through for good. There's one more P word, okay? So Sasha, go ahead and go to that next slide. It's the word peace. Maybe the last word you would think of in the middle of hurt. Peace. We'll dig into it a little bit more. We'll close some of the gaps between 17 and 37. We'll close some of those. We just kind of got a deeper look at 17 and just a small look at 37. Okay? Here's some of the things that he said at 37. Tell me if he isn't in peace. Genesis 45 verse 5. But don't be upset and don't be angry with yourselves for selling me to this place. That's a crack up to me. Don't be upset because you sold me as a slave. Like, don't be upset with yourself. Come on. It was God who sent me here ahead of you to preserve your lives. A couple of verses later, verse 7. God has sent me ahead of you to keep you and your families alive. Verse 8. So it was God who sent me here, not you. So can I give you a definition of peace? This is, I think, really important. This definition, maybe you've never thought of it this way. It's this idea. Peace is trusting that God sees the big picture until I see the big picture. You're going to find in Joseph's life, at least what we're told in Scripture, you're going to find in the worst moment, in the cistern, being falsely accused, in prison, being forgotten and abandoned, you're going to find there's this consistent thing. And it's this peace. And this peace is not peace because there's no chaos. This is peace in the middle of chaos. And this is what I really believe. I believe that kind of peace in the middle of chaos, when you're not at the future yet, you don't... He didn't know what that dream meant. Peace was this. Trusting that God could see the big picture. Until I could see the big picture. Sometimes we in this lifetime may not see the big picture. I go back to this New Testament passage a lot, where Stephen's being stoned to death, right? He saw a man standing there kind of monitoring the coats of the people that were throwing stones at him. And this was the lead accuser. He didn't get to see the big picture of it, did he? That day he died and he said, "Father, forgive them. They don't understand what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing." He didn't know that that man standing there named Saul would come to Christ and be renamed Paul and touch continents for Christ. He didn't know that. Peace is this. Trusting the one who sees the big picture. Until someday, here or in eternity, I see the big picture. That's what peace is. I hope you can grab one of these words if you're in that hurt, or if I, this morning, asking you, you opened up a painful part of your life and found healing can start with God's promises, partnering with God, knowing that God has purpose even in our pain, finding peace. So let me look at this, okay? This might be a smaller one to some, but I want to go through this. Christian, how hard did you work for football this summer? Did you work hard? Like you put in extra time? You didn't play for a couple weeks, right? Why didn't you play? Herniated disc. Okay? He'd come up to me and say, "I'm not playing, man. I've got this herniated disc." And I'd go, "Man, God, come on. Christian has worked hard. He's such a great testimony for Christ wherever he goes. Why?" And then I'm reminded of this. Now, peace is this. God sees the big picture. Peace is Christian trusting. Let me go bigger, okay? We've been praying for Steve for a while, right? We've been praying for him. It's a hard thing. It's okay. Don't wake him up. Don't you dare wake him up. We've been praying for him for a while. Do you get that? Like, I don't get that. God, you can do this. Just heal him. Peace is this. This is real peace. Peace is trusting that God sees the big picture when we can't see it. Otherwise, we're just torn up about it all the time. Whether it's Christian and football, Steve and cancer, it doesn't matter. We're torn up all the time. And we can walk around with this. Yeah, God's got it. But people know. We know. We know what peace is. Peace that passes human understanding is trusting the one who sees the big picture even when I don't see the big picture. So today's kind of a launching pad. Some of you may text me. I will be there in the month of November, but October, I think, is just too painful for me. What I hope and pray is this. I hope as we let God's loving Spirit dig into the pains of our life, that we get healing. So the first word today is hurt. You may want to come to next week if you've been hurt. It's the word hate. So just bring your sandwich signs and your billboards. Because we are going to protest hurt. We're going to hate it. Okay? I think in a way that can lead to, the very last word is heal. So I hope you'll let God's Holy Spirit open it up and lovingly, gently, or maybe not loving and gently, maybe in a carve-out surgical way, get to your hurt so we can heal. Okay? All right, let's bow for prayer. Lord, thanks. Help us as we move through our day, move through this week, move through life to be real and to be honest and to be moving towards growth and health. I pray for those who maybe they've buried it. Maybe it's just raw right now. Maybe it's not buried. It's just raw and they're living in a hurt. It's a big hurt. That they'll know Christians through the generations that have been hurt have taken these same steps to healing. They've grabbed a hold of your promises. They've held onto your hand and walked through the pain. Somehow, in a way that's just crazy to me, they found purpose even in the deepest, darkest pain. And they've lived with a peace. They didn't have to become destructive. They didn't have to go inside. They didn't have to lash out. There's another choice for us. Help us to live in this, to trust the one who sees the big picture until we can see the big picture. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Let's stand. A couple things. One, we still have our volunteers list up here for anybody who wants to help in the kitchen beforehand. I think I mentioned this. If we all do that, if each one of our families...